like it when you visit me at work. I don't much care for it either. This is not an appropriate venue for a young woman's employment. Why? Because of all the cryptids? Or because of the uniforms? Is that what you call them now? Hey, I wear less when I'm competing. Dominic sighed. Yes, I know. But at least that's to a purpose beyond coaxing cash from the unwary. I gave him an affronted look, not particularly concerned with whether or not he'd be able to see it. Hey now, it's not like I'm stripping. I'm a respectable dancer. Yes, of course, he said dryly. Whatever was I thinking?
I do not know. I've wanted to be a professional dancer since I was 6 years old, a calling that has managed to interfere with my involvement in the family business several times over the years. It's hard to find the time to spend a summer on a Greenpeace vessel concealing the plesiosaur migration from oceanographers when I need to be practicing for half a dozen upcoming competitions. Ballroom dance is a cutthroat world, and if you take so much as a long trip to Disney World, it can trash your standing for years. Dancing for Kitty was a long way from the rarefied heights of the World Tango Championships. But hell, it was dancing, and I was getting paid for it. That was close enough for me, especially where paying my rent was concerned. Dominic frowned a little as he studied me, his expression barely visible through the dark. Finally, he asked,
"Is there some place we could go, for a brief while, where we wouldn't be observed? I have matters I need to discuss with you."
"Well, we can't go to your place because you've never let me see where you live, and we can't go to the coffee shop because you always get all weird when I want to discuss things in public," I said slowly.
"You realize what that means?" "Yes, unfortunately," Dominic sighed. "I don't suppose there's a chance that they're currently involved in some religious observance involving total silence and secluded meditation?"
I laughed. Maybe it was cruel, but I couldn't help myself.
"You really don't know Aislinn Mice very well, do you?"
"It was an idle hope," said Dominic.
"Well, if the mice are not engaged in ritual silence, can I throw myself upon your mercy and request that we take a cab to your apartment, rather than indulging in your customary suicidal approach?"
"Nope." I leaned up onto my toes, pressing a quick kiss to his cheek. Dominic looked suitably flustered in response. Sometimes I wonder if I'd be as attracted to him if he weren't so much fun to torment. That's probably one of those things I shouldn't think about too hard. "You can take a cab if you want, but I'm going to be taking the overland route." Dominic sighed again, more deeply this time.
"You're going to plummet to your demise one day, and I'm going to have to beg your cousin to notify your family, as I'm reasonably sure they'd shoot me for having been in the city when you lost your unending battle against gravity."
"And again, you say the sweetest things," I said. "Bye now. I'll see you at the apartment." I offered him a little wave before turning and sprinting for the edge of the roof. One step carried me onto the low retaining wall, and another step carried me over it, dropping down into the dark on the other side. Manhattan is a city built almost entirely on the principle that you can never have too much straight up. This makes the city a free-runner's paradise and a death trap at the same time, since one moment of carelessness can result in 15 stories of freefall, concluding with a painful introduction to the street. I've managed to avoid doing anything quite that dramatic, but I've had more than a few close calls. The thing to remember about free-running is that energy has to go somewhere. Your momentum can either be translated into going where you want to go, or it can be taken away from you and used to send you where gravity wants you to go. And you probably don't want to go where gravity wants you to go. Continual motion reduces the chances of a fall, assuming you have the training and physical skill necessary to keep that motion under control. I dropped like a stone for the first two stories, plummeting almost all the way back to the club, before I grabbed hold of a ledge and used the energy from my fall to fling myself, hard, onto the nearby fire escape. From there, I slid down the ladder and dropped to the street below, landing with my weight balanced on my toes. The world seemed to stop for a moment, everything falling into the sweet, familiar pattern of the run. And then I was off, racing for the next building, where the dumpster would lead to the fire escape, would lead to the roof, would lead to the next step in my journey home. Free-running in a city as vertical as Manhattan means a lot of going up, just so I can go down again. It may look inefficient, but familiarity and speed make it the fastest way for me to get almost anywhere. There's rarely traffic on the rooftops, and what there is consists almost entirely of cryptids and cryptid sympathizers, almost all of whom are happy to step aside and let me pass. I'm a price girl, after all. I'm their defender, even if I am sleeping with the enemy. But when I'm running, that doesn't matter. When I'm running, everything is simple, even the risk of a permanent fall. I wouldn't change it for the world. Dominic was waiting outside the door to my semi-legal sublet apartment when I came trotting up the stairs. He looked calm, cool, and collected as always. I, on the other hand, was a sweaty mess, although the endorphins generated by my run had me flying high enough that I really didn't care. "How is it you can always get in here without me?" I asked, slowing to a walk. "I thought this building was supposed to have security." "I have my ways." "You stole somebody's keys, didn't you?" I used my own key to unlock the door. Dominic looked affronted. "I did nothing of the sort," he said. "I bribed the building manager with a tale of woe concerning our lover's spat." "Uh-huh. Was this before or after we actually had one?" "Oh, considerably before. Why am I not in any way surprised? Come on, time to face the Inquisition." I pocketed my keys as I pushed the door open, took a deep breath, and stepped into the apartment. Dominic followed quickly. He'd been over often enough to know what was coming, and that we needed to have the door closed before it got fully underway. The latch had barely clicked into place when the mice filling the apartment's short entrance hall began to cheer wildly, waving their tiny banners and ritual implements in the air.
"Hail! Hail! Hail the homecoming of the arboreal priestess!"
"Yeah, guys," I said, dropping my bag on the little table that was meant to hold the mail. "I'm home. Dominic's here, too, so could you maybe chill out for a while?"
"Hail!"
shouted the mice, overcome with ecstasy at the idea of having two humans they could cheer at.
"Hail the visitation of the god of questionable motivations!"
Dominic raised his eyebrows.
"Is that my divinity this week?"
"Apparently so. My family has been living with Aeslin mice for generations. They're tiny, furry, religious fanatics, and they worship us as their gods. No, I'm not quite sure how it started, but it's pretty standard for the Aeslin. Every colony anyone has ever encountered has been deeply, religiously devoted to something, and there's no law requiring that the something make any sense whatsoever. We put up with them because they're cute, and because they're useful. Aeslin mice turn everything they witness into religious ritual, and their oral history is impeccable. According to the Aeslin, all the women in my family are priestesses, connecting them directly to the divine, and all the men are gods. Maybe that's a little sexist of them, but, hey, they're talking mice. If they want to enforce their own weird ideas of human gender roles, we're willing to let them, if only to avoid the necessity of answering their questions about human sexuality. Believe me, there are worse things in this world than being considered a priestess. Since Dominic's been sleeping with me, the mice have been trying various labels on him, looking for the one that fits. My personal favorite was the week they spent calling him the god of absolutely never smiling, no, not ever. They did it because they felt it was accurate. I enjoyed it because it annoyed the crap out of him. The mice were still cheering, although it was less uniform than it had been when we first arrived. I hunkered down, scanning the throng until I spotted the pigeon skull hat worn by the current leader of the colony. "Dominic and I need to talk, and we need to do it without interruptions, I said. What's the price for an hour of privacy?
An offering must be made,
replied the mouse priest, without hesitation. I could actually hear the capital letters in the middle of the sentence. I thought about what was in the fridge for a moment, before saying, Tomorrow's grocery day. Will you accept a box of Hostess cupcakes and some sharp cheddar for now? This required a quick conference with the mice around him before he looked up and nodded, banging his kitten-bone staff against the floor to signal his acceptance.
It will suffice, he intoned.
Great. Dominic, I'll meet you in the living room.
Naturally.
He was only shuddering a little as he turned and beat a hasty retreat away from the colony. That was a big improvement. Dominic may be tolerant of my cryptid-loving lifestyle, but the Aeslin mice still creeped him right the hell out, maybe because they insisted on staring at him constantly, waiting for him to prove his godhood. And this is why neither I nor my siblings ever brought home any dates during high school. It took me about 5 minutes to get the mice sufficiently placated, and hence out of our hair for at least the next half hour. They were still doing their rapturous dance in celebration of the coming of cheese and cake when I left the kitchen and walked down the short hall to the living room. Dominic was sitting on the side of the couch that wasn't completely covered by my dance costumes. All done, I said, moving to lean up against an open patch of wall. So, what did we need all this privacy for?
Verity.
Dominic hesitated. Then he stood, looking at me solemnly.
I must ask, no, I must beg, that you not become upset until you have heard everything I need to say. It is very important that you understand everything I have come here to tell you, and why this discussion needed to happen both immediately and in secret. May I have your assurance that you will remain calm?
Dominic, what's going on? I straightened, unconsciously trying to match the seriousness of his stance. Is everything okay?
Please, your assurance.
Yeah, sure. I'm a pretty calm person, you know that. It was a sign of how concerned he was that he didn't even roll his eyes at such a blatant lie. Instead, he continued,
I have become fond of you, frustrating and impossible as you are, and I have learned a great deal about the unnatural races with which we share this planet through our association. It's difficult to view them all as monsters when so many of them seem to be genuinely decent individuals, damned solely by the accident of their birth.
I'll be sure to tell Sarah you said so, I said dryly. Dominic ignored me.
I do not wish any harm to you or to the people. And yes, I admit now that they are people to whom you have introduced me. Please understand that.
Dominic? I bit my lip, looking at him warily. You're starting to freak me out a little bit here.
Good, he said, with surprising fervency. You should be freaked out. You need to leave, Verity. You need to take your mice and your cousin and anything and anyone else you care about in this city and leave.
My eyes widened.
What? Get out of here, please, while you still can.
What the hell are you talking about? I took a step forward, shock fading into anger as I scowled at him.
Stop talking like the Covenant and start speaking English, or I swear to God I will start introducing you to my knives.
I've already met most of them, said Dominic,
and sighed, shoulders slumping. He reached out one hand, pressing his fingers against my cheek.
Verity, the Covenant is coming. They're coming here. They want to check my work. They want to verify my reports.
What? I breathed. Dominic nodded very slightly, like the gesture pained him.
They're coming to see how close I am to beginning the purge. Run, Verity. Run, now, while you still can. If you're here when they arrive, they'll kill you.
Chapter 4.
The question you have to ask yourself before you run away is this. Am I running because I have no choice? Or am I running because I am afraid? And if I'm running because I'm afraid, will I actually escape? Or will I just delay the inevitable? Evelyn Baker. A semi-legal sublet in Greenwich Village, about 30 seconds later.
What?
I repeated, loudly enough that the mice actually stopped celebrating for a few seconds. They've lived with my family long enough to learn that sometimes shouting means it's time to scramble for the nearest hidey hole. Their exultations resumed when my question wasn't followed by gunfire. The mice may have learned some self-preservation, but there's nothing in this world or any other that can interrupt Aeslin religious rites for very long. Dominic, on the other hand, looked genuinely upset.
This wasn't my idea, Verity. You have to believe me. I tried to convince them that there was no reason for them to send a team to check up on me, but my superiors feel that this is too large a territory for me to control on my own. They want to see for themselves that things are going as well as I've claimed.
And are they? Going as well as you claimed? How many cryptids do they think you've killed?
I couldn't quite keep the edge out of my tone. It wasn't his fault, and I knew it. If Dominic had wanted to sell me out to the Covenant, he would never have warned me that they were on their way. That didn't stop all the old demons from rearing their heads. The ones that said this was always going to be the way things ended. That Covenant boys don't change what they are just because Price girls are occasionally stupid enough to fall into bed with them, and I'd been a fool for trying to tell myself otherwise.
That's not fair, he said quietly.
When are they going to get here?
Soon.
Could you be a little more precise? Tomorrow? Next week? Next month? Should I even bother to run?
God damn it, Verity! Can you stop being angry with me for 1 second and just think? I'm not telling you this because I want to gloat. I'm trying to help. I'm trying to give you a chance. You can't.
My anger was suddenly gone, replaced by a resignation so deep it felt like it ran all the way down to my bones. There's no way I can evacuate the entire cryptid population of Manhattan. Even if I wanted to try, they'd have nowhere to go. It would be chaos. And if I can't get them all out, I can't go.
Verity, they're not...
He stopped speaking so abruptly that for a moment I thought he might have actually bitten his tongue. Somehow that just made me feel even more resigned. You were about to say that they weren't worth staying here and maybe getting myself killed over, weren't you? He didn't answer me. Come on, Dominic. Tell me that I'm wrong. All I'm asking you to do is look me in the eye and tell me that I'm wrong.
I can't,
he said, very quietly. I nodded. I sort of figured that was what you were going to say. Did you really think I could run and leave them all here to die? Did you think I was that much of a coward? He didn't say anything. He didn't have to. The look on his face was all the answer that I needed from him, and it broke my heart a little bit to see it. I see. I took a breath, drawing myself as upright as I could. It helped if I told myself that this was another form of Paso Doble, the only form of Latin dance whose competitive form was as much a battle as anything else. Thank you for the warning. I'll take it from here. Dominic's eyes widened in visible alarm.
Verity, please don't do anything rash.
I'm a Price girl, remember? We specialize in rash, with the occasional side order of outright stupid. I straightened a little. I think you'd better go.
I wish you wouldn't be like this.
If wishes were horses, we'd have a way easier time feeding the chupacabras. Now please, go. The mice were still celebrating in the kitchen, but that sound seemed to drop away, leaving nothing but Dominic and me and the sudden silence stretching out between us. I'd always known that we came from different worlds and that we'd have to go back to them someday. I'd just been telling myself that we'd have longer than this, and I'd been wrong.
Very well, he said finally.
He walked back to the door, shoulders ramrod straight beneath that damn pretentious duster he was so fond of. The mice cheered louder as he approached them, and he nodded genially in their direction. A small kindness, but one that showed how much he'd grown. How much I thought he'd grown. I was starting to realize I'd never known him at all. He only looked back once. Dark brown eyes pained above a mouth that was set as firmly as his shoulders. Then he opened the apartment door, and he was gone, leaving me alone. The sound of a door swinging shut had never seemed so final. It felt like I was moving in slow motion as I walked across the living room to where I'd dropped my bag. My cell phone was tucked safely into the front pocket. It took me 3 tries to make the zipper work, and another 5 tries before I could successfully access my contact list and call the one number that had a prayer of helping. Home. Covenant purges are legendary in most cryptid circles, including the ones my family moves in. The Covenant of St. George sends in a team of their best men, and when the dust clears and the blood has been hosed off the streets, nothing inhuman remains standing. When Dominic had first arrived in Manhattan, I'd asked my father to look up any historical records relating to purges in the New York area. The things he'd been able to find were bad enough to give me nightmares for weeks, and that was saying something, given all the other nightmare fodder that particular summer had offered me. Some people called the Covenant monster hunters, and if there's anything that demonstrates how wrong that label really is, it's the way they purge a city. True hunters spare the children and the pregnant females, allowing the population to remain stable. That's how they ensure they'll always have something to hunt. The Covenant has no such concerns. They don't want to ensure that they'll always have something to hunt. They want to wipe every breathing cryptid off the face of the planet. I don't know that they give out merit badges for confirmed extinctions, but I wouldn't be surprised. The members of the Covenant aren't monster hunters. They're exterminators. The phone rang for what seemed like forever, but was probably only a few seconds. Then my father's voice was in my ear, asking in that warm, familiar tone,
"Why shouldn't I hang up on you? You have 5 seconds."
My family has been answering the home phone as rudely as possible for as long as I can remember. It's a mechanism for screening calls without raising suspicion from the wrong quarters. As far as we're concerned, that's pretty much everyone who isn't a relative or on the extremely short list labeled allies.
"Dad, it's me," I said.
"Verity," he said, delighted. "That's an excellent reason not to hang up on you. Hello, sweetheart. What's going on? Shouldn't you be at work?"
"Yes, normally I would be. Daddy, there's a problem." His tone sobered in an instant.
"Are you all right?"
"I'm fine."
"Honey, you don't sound fine. Is it Sarah?"
"Not yet." Any purge of Manhattan would naturally affect her. Assuming the Covenant could find her, there's nothing in this world or any other that hides as well as a cuckoo that doesn't want to be found, and that includes the hide-behinds.
"Then what's going on?"
"It's the Covenant, Daddy." I walked back to the couch and sat down, covering my face with my free hand. That helped a little. Maybe if I stuck my head under something and waited patiently, the Covenant would go away. "Dominic says they're coming to check his work. They want to see how far along he is in preparing the city for a purge. Which means the next step is either them figuring out that he isn't prepared at all, or the Covenant starting the purge." There was a long pause before my father asked,
"Did he tell you this?"
"Yes."
"Is he there with you now?"
"No. I asked him to leave." There was another, longer pause. Finally, my father said,
"I don't think you should have done that."
"What?" I straightened, pulling my hand away from my face.
"Who are you and what have you done with my father? If he was willing to tell you that the team was coming..."
"But not willing to stand up to the Covenant. Not willing to stop them from..."
"Then he may be willing to work with you to minimize the damage to the population."
My father's tone was firm and left little room for argument. He's been in charge of our branch of the family since before I was born, and that means he's had time to get very, very good at giving orders to people who aren't very good at taking them.
"I know it's hard. I can tell that you feel betrayed right now."
Just a little. Why are you on his side?"
I stood, pacing across the living room to the hallway door. The mice were finishing up their celebration. I stopped there, leaning against the wall and watching them. At least the mice could still find things to be happy about. I thought we hated the Covenant.
I also thought you'd decided that Dominic deserved to be judged as an individual.
I didn't say anything. Dad sighed.
Verity, please. I'm glad you called me. That was the right thing to do, and I'll do my best to get you some backup. But that doesn't mean you can neglect the resources that you already have at hand. I'm not telling you to trust him. I'm telling you to use him for as long as you possibly can.
Hold on a second, I said, my stomach sinking. Are you telling me that you might be able to send me backup, and that until then, I have to work with the man who may or may not be in the process of selling me out to the people we've been hiding from since before I was born? I paused. I lost track of that sentence somewhere in the middle. Dad, you can't. You can't expect me to work with him, not now.
You have to.
I won't.
Are you saying that because you think it's the right thing to do? Or because he hurts your feelings by not cutting ties with everything he's ever known as soon as it came into conflict with what you wanted?
I didn't have an answer for that, so I didn't even try. Dad kept talking.
I know this is hard. I will do everything I can to get you the help you need. But Dominic is right there, Verry, and he wouldn't have told you if he didn't want to help, at least a little.
My voice was very small as I asked, "What if he doesn't want to help me anymore?" I turned him down hard.
"Then we'll figure something else out."
"Okay." I pushed away from the wall, turning my back on the mice. "What do I tell Sarah?"
"Tell her that she should come home. She has no business staying in that city while a purge is going on."
I wanted to make a snarky comment about how he'd leave me to die while he evacuated my adopted cousin for her own good. I couldn't do it because he was right. I was raised fighting, whether I wanted to or not. Sarah was raised doing her homework, obeying curfew, and trying to pass for human without constantly rearranging the brains of the people around her. She could keep herself out of sight better than damn near anyone else in the world, but she wouldn't be any help if things got really bad. "I'll tell her," I said quietly. "I can't promise that she'll listen."
"Of course not,"
he said, and laughed.
"She's a member of this family, isn't she?"
"Yeah," I agreed. "She is." Dad and I talked for a few minutes after that, but if anything of substance was discussed, I didn't remember it after I hung up. All I really remembered was the tone of his voice, struggling to reassure me without letting his own panic show. It's times like that that make me wish my parents were just a little better at lying to me. It would be nice to have them say, "Don't worry, honey, everything's under control," and actually be able to make myself believe them. I found myself back in the kitchen doorway, watching the mouse acolytes as they dutifully cleaned up the remains of their celebration. I don't really understand the full details of the Aeslin religious structure. I don't think anyone human, or even demi-human like Sarah or my Uncle Ted, can. The logic of the Aeslin is not like our Earth logic. One of the acolytes noticed my observation and straightened, tiny oil-drop eyes fixed on me in rapt fascination.
"Priestess," it said solemnly, "I am blessed by your observance."
Nobody pronounces capital letters like an Aeslin mouse. "Hey," I said, "do you know when the night prayers will be over? I need to talk to the head priest at some point."
"The Catechism of the Patient Priestess is to be recited tonight," said the acolyte. "It should conclude with the sunrise. Would you like me to go to the head priest and request his attendance upon your holiness?"
The patient priestess was their name for my great-great-grandmother, Enid Healy, who belonged to the Covenant of St. George once upon a time, before she and her husband wised up, quit, and moved to America. According to the mice, she was a really awesome lady. I wish I'd had the opportunity to meet her, but, well, my family isn't exactly the live long and die peacefully in your bed sort. She was killed a long time before my parents were born.
"That's okay,"
I said, crouching down to put myself more on the acolyte's level. I can talk to him when the catechism is over. Have you been to this recitation before?
No, priestess, said the acolyte, with obvious reverence. I am very excited by the knowledge that this will be a night filled with revelations and enlightenments.
My family's colony of Aeslin have so many religious rituals at this point that even the supposedly yearly rites don't actually come around on a yearly basis anymore. There was a 10-year gap between recitations of the Catechism of the Violent Priestess, my great-grandmother, Frances Healy. Then again, that may have been because Mom yelled at the mice about the property damage every time they performed those particular devotions. At least the revelations and enlightenments offered by Enid's life story weren't as likely to hurt the apartment security deposit. The Sasquatch I was subletting from probably wouldn't take, but the mice had religious needs, as much of an excuse. Crap. I needed to call her answering service and tell her that there might be a purge coming. If I died trying to stop it, she could come home to a very, very bad situation. Considering I'd been living out of her apartment for almost a year, that didn't seem fair. Well, if you see the head priest before the services begin, and he doesn't look too busy, can you let him know that I'll be coming to see him sometime around dawn?
Yes, priestess, said the acolyte.
Cool, thanks. I straightened, picking up my backpack in the process. I'll be back later. Don't burn down the apartment. The small audience of previously unnoticed mice that had come to watch with rapt attention as I spoke to the acolyte suddenly cheered, loudly.
Hail the commitment to not ignite the domicile!
Yeah, I agreed. No fire.
Hail the absence of fire!
I'll just be going now, I said, and fled, before the mice could launch fully into some sort of ritualized fire safety lesson. Sometimes being one of the holy figures of my own personal church was more trouble than it was worth. Dominic didn't pick up when I called his cell phone. I didn't have his home number, assuming he even had one. I'd never seen the place where he lived. He could have been emulating Sarah and just moving from hotel to hotel, keeping a roof over his head without tying himself to a permanent address. The more I thought about it, the more it seemed like I'd been deluding myself all along. There was no way he'd ever really trusted me. Still, I needed to put that aside, at least for right now, and figure out how I was going to deal with the very real threat of a covenant purge. I broke into a run as I pushed my phone deep into the front pocket of my jeans, building to a full-out sprint. I needed to find Dominic. I needed to start warning people. And there was nothing saying I couldn't combine the two. Gravity took over once I stepped off the edge of the roof, and I was able to push other concerns aside in favor of the pressing need to keep myself from splashing on the pavement. That's one of the nice things about free running. It's very distracting when I need it to be. I'm focused enough on my surroundings that I can usually avoid things that present an actual danger, like pissed-off cryptids or booby traps, but I don't need to think about my faltering dance career or the fact that the man I'd been starting to think about as maybe being my boyfriend wasn't really boyfriend material, or the upcoming covenant purge. All I have to think about is the run. My first destination was a little cafe named Gingerbread Pudding. Going there wouldn't help me find Dominic. It would help me begin the process of warning the city's cryptids that they needed to keep their heads down, and maybe consider taking that California vacation they'd been dreaming about. I was telling the truth when I told Dominic that there was no way I could evacuate the entire city. That didn't mean I had to leave the people I considered my friends unprepared for what was coming. Letting go of the last rooftop between me and my destination, I dropped down into the dark beyond. The hours posted outside of the Gingerbread Pudding storefront said that they were open until 9 p.m., and a cheery sign in the window told me to come back tomorrow for fresh sweets and the best hot chocolate in New York. I can testify to the quality of both the baked goods and the hot drinks, but coming back tomorrow wasn't an option. I banged on the door. Politely. When 5 minutes passed without anyone coming to let me in, I banged again. Impolitely this time.
"Hey!"
I half-whispered, half-shouted, pressing my mouth up to the crack in the door.
Sunil! Roshak! Come let me in! I need to talk to you!
I was starting to consider breaking and entering when I heard the bolt on the door being undone, and the door swung soundlessly open, revealing a smoking hot Indian man in his mid-twenties. Note that the word human was nowhere in that sentence. Sunil was a Madura, a type of humanoid cryptid. His skin was a rich, medium brown, and his hair was a few shades darker, distinguishable from black only because his brother Roshak had hair that was even darker. Their sister Payusha's coloring had been somewhere in between, with lighter brown eyes like Sunil's, and true black hair like Roshak's. Payusha had been sacrificed by the snake cult that was trying to wake the dragon sleeping under the city. I tried to save her. I hadn't been fast enough. There were reasons I thought warning her brothers about the coming purge was really the least that I could do. Sunil didn't look surprised to see me.
"It's late," he said.
"I know. I'm as diurnal as you are, but this is sort of an emergency. Did I wake you? Can I come in?"
"No, you didn't wake me, and yes, you can come in. Roshak is in the cafe kitchen heating up some gingerbread."
Sunil stepped to one side, waving for me to enter. I did, blinking at him. "Were you expecting me?"
"Yes," said Dominic.
I snapped my head around so fast it made my ears ring. He was standing in the doorway to the private dining alcove, a festively decorated little nook with a single table and no windows opening on the outside. That was how I'd been able to miss the light.
"I was hoping you'd come here after you finished calling your family. Did you convey my regards to your father?"
"Not this time," I said. Sunil closed the door behind me, pulling the shade a little tighter. I barely noticed. My attention was focused on Dominic. "Why are you here?"
"Because I knew you would come."
He smiled a little, indicating Sunil with one hand.
"You are a deeply infuriating woman, but you're also a dependable one. I knew you'd start by warning your friends. The dragons will panic. Then they will demand explanations and protection, all of which will take a great deal of time. You were going to begin either here or with your cousin."
"And she can wait," I said softly. "Dominic."
"Why don't you go sit down?" asked Sunil. "I'll help Roshak in the kitchen."
He looked uncomfortable, maybe because very few cryptids who've seen a one-on-one meeting between a price and a member of the Covenant have walked away unwounded. "Thanks, Sunil," I said. He flashed me a smile and left. Dominic, meanwhile, gestured for me to follow him into the dining nook. He'd clearly been there for a while. A half-empty cup of hot cocoa was sitting in front of one seat, and his duster was hanging from a hook on the wall. He didn't say anything as he sat, picked up his cup, and looked at me. "I'm sorry about before," I said awkwardly, sitting down across from him. "I know you were trying to help. My reaction was out of line." Dominic sipped his cocoa.
"Yes," he agreed. "It was. To be fair, however, it was unexpected information. You had good reason to react as you did. I may have hoped that you would respond better, but I knew not to place all my faith in hoping."
"Dad said, I mean, he thinks, and maybe I think, too. I mean..." I stopped, sighing, and took a deep breath before I continued. "Dominic, there's no way we can evacuate this entire city before the Covenant gets here, and there's no way for you to prevent them from coming. I'm going to need help making sure they do as little damage as possible. Please, I need your help." Dominic's answer was delayed by Roshak's arrival. He was carrying a plate of the cafe's rightfully famous gingerbread. He also had a cup of hot cocoa for me.
"Hello, Verity," he said with an honest smile.
"Hey, Roshak." For a man who accused me of killing his sister the first time we met, Roshak has mellowed a lot where I'm concerned. I stood as he put the dishes down, giving him a quick hug. How is everything?
It's been better.
His eyes darted towards Dominic as he pulled away from me.
Is there really a purge coming?
Yes. There was no percentage in sugarcoating things, so to speak. That's what we're talking about now.
So Neil and I won't leave.
I bit back a sigh as I settled into my seat. I didn't think you would, so I guess we'll just have to keep you under the radar.
I guess so,
said Rorschach, and smiled again before he turned to slip out of the nook. I looked back at Dominic, who was watching me with unguarded affection.
You are insane, infuriating, and in dire need of aid if you're going to survive this, he said.
My help was always yours. All you had to do was ask for it.
I'm asking, I said.
Then I'm yours.
He nudged the plate of gingerbread toward me.
Gingerbread?
Gingerbread and tactics, I agreed, picking up a piece of piping hot baked goodness. Now that's a date that I can really get behind. Dominic laughed. After a moment, I joined in. Chapter 5. The Covenant of St. George isn't evil, simply misguided. This doesn't mean you can't shoot them, but it does mean you should apologize to their next of kin, should the opportunity ever arise. Enid Healy. Downtown Manhattan, approaching the Port Hope Hotel. We ate half a plate of gingerbread and drank all the cocoa before coming to the conclusion that our next stop, tactically speaking, was Sarah's place. She was family, which meant she had to be warned about what was coming. Beyond that, she was the fastest way for us to tell the dragons about the situation. No one, and I mean no one, my family included, hates the Covenant of St. George like the dragons do. William is the last known male of their species, largely because of the Covenant's fondness for dragon slaying. When they heard that a purge was coming, they were going to freak out. My family used to belong to the Covenant a long time ago, and the dragons have never quite forgiven us for that. If they got the news from me, things could turn ugly. Sarah, on the other hand, is a cryptid, which makes her automatically more trustworthy than a human. It doesn't hurt that everybody wants to trust a cuckoo, right up until the cuckoo stabs them in the back, steals their wallet, and runs away to Acapulco with their life savings. She'd have a better chance of explaining what was going on than I would, and sending her to explain things to the dragons would put her safely underground, in William's nest, where I wouldn't have to worry about her for a little while. In deference to Dominic's dislike of falling, and my own desire to finish eating my gingerbread, which was just as good as the sign on the door had promised it would be, I allowed him to flag down a taxi on the corner in front of Gingerbread Pudding. After checking my phone to be sure that I hadn't forgotten where Sarah was staying, I gave the driver the address for the Port Hope Hotel and settled in my seat, ignoring my dislike of New York taxis, in favor of enjoying my Madura-concocted treats. We were about halfway there when Dominic raised his head, gave me a bewildered look, and asked, "Where are we going again?" "To see my cousin, Sarah." He still had some gingerbread left. I leaned over, snatching the last bite from his fingers before he could object. "She just changed hotels last week. That's why you can't remember where we're going. Don't worry about it." Dominic's bewilderment lasted a few more seconds before it cleared away, replaced first by understanding, and then by an irritated scowl.
"I hate the way she does that."
"I know. But she doesn't mean to, so you should really just shrug it off and wait until she stops hitting you so hard." Given sufficient exposure to Sarah, he'd develop more resistance to her passive defenses, even as she got better at reading his mind. It's a trade-off, and one that most of the family has been more than happy to make, since it means we don't literally forget that she's in the house when we can't see her. Dominic didn't say anything. He just kept scowling. To be honest, I understand his irritation. Camouflage is the cuckoo's primary weapon. They become a part of their surroundings,
disappearing from casual view by fitting in so perfectly that it's impossible to think of them as unusual. Sarah's periodic disappearing acts were the result of instinct telling her not to stay in one place long enough to get caught. That, and hotel security systems refusing to be telepathically influenced into ignoring the fact that she was essentially a squatter. Unfortunately, the amount of telepathic static kicked up by a cuckoo in the process of changing nests has a tendency to make even allies forget what's going on, which is why I made sure to keep her latest hotel address in my phone memos. I encrypted the addresses, naturally, using a code key that requires intimate knowledge of the Argentine tango to break. Paranoia is a way of life when they're genuinely out to get you. My grandma Angela, also a cuckoo, in addition to being both Sarah and Mom's adopted mother, says Sarah's relocations make us forget where she is because normal cuckoos don't have any allies. They just have enemies who happen to not be trying to kill them at that particular moment. So periodically disappearing from absolutely everybody's radar is the only way most ordinary cuckoos survive long enough to ruin the lives of everyone around them. Sarah may eventually be able to stop that from happening, but it's going to take years of practice. Luckily, she doesn't have any natural predators or catch human diseases, so unless she walks in front of a bus, she's going to live a long, long time. Cuckoos are lucky that way. They're a charming species, the cuckoos. Except for the two that I'm technically related to, they're the only cryptid race I can think of that should really be shot on sight, assuming you'd know one when you saw one, which is questionable. As it stands, they're the only race that has absolutely no good ecological reason to exist. They're not true apex predators, and they're not true parasites. They practice brood parasitism, but they usually do it in empty nests, so it's not even like they're reducing the human population, something that does occasionally need to be considered, no matter how distasteful I may find the idea. Near as anyone can tell, the cuckoos don't serve an otherwise unfulfilled purpose in any ecosystem. They just kill, and destroy, and break things for the pleasure of seeing the shards come raining down. Oh, and they do algebra. For fun. Their universal fascination with higher mathematics may be the least human thing about them. The taxi led us off in front of the Port Hope Hotel. Dominic paid the cabbie, tipping generously, I was pleased to note, before turning to join me in studying the building. It was modest by Sarah's usual 4-star standards, although it wasn't run down by any means. For a moment, I couldn't imagine what she was doing here. Then I spotted a sign in the hotel window and had to bite my lip to stop myself from laughing. Dominic frowned at me. "What is it?" "Sarah has finally returned to the mothership," I said, pointing to the sign. He followed my finger, and then, to my surprise, Dominic DeLuca laughed out loud. "Visit the Manhattan Museum of Mathematics," cajoled the sign. "Only 4 blocks away on East 26th Street. Math can be fun." "I wonder if they have souvenir postcards," Dominic said. "I wonder if she left them any after she hit the gift shop," I countered. He laughed again. This time I joined him, and together we walked into the light of the hotel's lobby. The telepathic static signaling Sarah's presence hit as soon as we were inside. To my surprise, it was coming from the other side of the lobby. I turned to see her waving cheerfully from the hotel's restaurant, one of those modern things where the tables also serve as the restaurant wall. It's supposed to seem homey and welcoming. I think it's a good way to cut down on the amount of cover in a firefight. My standards are perhaps not those of the people who build hotels. Sarah was dressed in her going-to-school best. A bulky brown sweater that did absolutely nothing for her porcelain-pale complexion, and a calf-length green skirt that looked like she'd stolen it from one of the Brady Bunch kids, and her long black hair was tied into a ponytail. She had a glass of something that looked like over-thick cherry soda in the hand that wasn't busy waving. "It's ketchup and tonic water," she informed me blithely, about a half-second after my eyes hit her glass. "Delicious. And a good preventative against malaria." "Sarah,
You don't have blood as most mammals understand it. Why would you need to worry about malaria? Dominic shot me a startled glance, and I realized that I'd spoken aloud.
Damn it.
Stupid telepaths, I mumbled, chagrined.
Sorry.
No, you're not, I thought back at her, staring across the lobby toward the restaurant.
No, I'm not,
Sarah agreed. She stood as we came closer, putting her ketchup soda down on the table.
What are you guys doing here? Are you hungry? They make a really fabulous lasagna here.
The kitchen's technically closed, but if I asked...
Can we go up to your room? It's sort of important, and I'd rather not talk about it down here.
Sarah blinked, expression going momentarily confused. Then she nodded.
Sure.
I was pretty much done here anyway. She picked up her soda and stepped around the table, passing over the line between the restaurant's carpet and the lobby's hardwood floor. She didn't leave any money on the table as she toasted the hostess on duty with her glass and started toward the elevator. If I tried that, I would have wound up with an irritated hostess chasing me down for a signature. Sarah just got a blissful smile and an enthusiastic wave, like she was the Queen of England or something. Stupid telepaths, I said again, and followed Sarah. As always, Sarah was staying in the nicest suite in the hotel, although this one was, at least, only slightly larger than my apartment. She'd been there for 3 days. It was already a disaster zone that would have made my mother clutch her head and weep for the future of our family. Dominic looked around the room, frowning for a moment before he said, as delicately as he could,
"You might do well by allowing the maids to access your room."
"Oh, they were just here this morning," said Sarah guilelessly. She looked at Dominic, improbably blue eyes wide, and asked, "Don't you think they did a good job?" Dominic sputtered. Sarah giggled, hiding it behind her hand. "Sarah, don't toy with the Covenant boy," I said sternly. "He and I have both had a long night, and it's not going to get any better from here."
"What's going on?"
Sarah took a sip of her tomato soda, frowning at me.
"You're reading awfully serious."
"Cuckoos don't really have telepathic ethics, unless you count loot first, then burn, as an ethical approach to reading someone else's mind. Grandma Angela got past this by encouraging Sarah to watch every episode, ever, of Star Trek, The Next Generation, and Babylon 5. Sarah went on to augment her education with lots of comic books and classic science fiction. End result, a very polite, psychic geek who won't invade your brain without permission. Most of the time. I took a breath, trying to figure out how to word what I needed to tell her. Then I looked helplessly at Dominic. He frowned, squared his shoulders, and turned to Sarah.
"Please, read my mind," he said. "It will be the simplest way to convince you both of the urgency of the situation and my role in it. In this one instance, I give you my consent."
Sarah's eyes widened. The Covenant of St. George specializes in hating cryptids, and Dominic was still a member of the Covenant, no matter how relaxed he was becoming about associating with monsters, like my cousin. Him giving her permission to read his mind was huge, and she had no idea how to deal with it. Finally, she went with the easy option.
"Okay, just clear your mind of everything but what you want me to see, and try not to think about Verity naked, okay?"
Dominic reddened. I smirked. Telling people not to think about nudity is the best way to make sure they think about nudity. That was intentional. If you're busy trying frantically not to picture someone's tits, you're not thinking about keeping the telepath out of your head. Sarah says it's a good way to get around a person's natural defenses. Sarah's eyes began to glow white. The brightness rapidly increased until her pupils and irises had been completely obscured. Then her eyes widened again, mouth falling open in a horrified,
"Oh, you're coming here?"
she demanded, in a voice that couldn't decide whether it wanted to be a whisper or a squeak, and wound up demonstrating the attributes of both.
"Yes," said Dominic gravely.
They... You... How can you let them do these things?
The glow in Sarah's eyes went off as she broke contact with Dominic's mind. Her entire body seemed to shudder, and she took a long step backward, away from him.
You know what they're coming here to do. I know you know. I saw it.
And you also know that I did not invite them, and that I am here to help.
Dominic sighed deeply.
Believe me, Sarah, I was raised to want nothing more than to be able to join my brethren in cleansing this city without remorse. Part of me still wants to be sure in my mission, confident in the righteousness of the Covenant's purpose. But I can't. I can't be that man anymore.
This is why they call you people dangerous, you know, Sarah said, looking at me. He's telling the truth.
She paused, gaze swinging back to Dominic. That's really why you wanted me to go into your head, isn't it? So I could tell Verity that you were being sincere when you said you wanted to help us not wind up dead.
I told her myself. I doubt that she fully believed me, said Dominic calmly. This seemed to be the simplest way to answer everyone's questions.
You let a cryptid poke around inside your head so I'd believe that you wanted to be a good guy? I asked. Wow, you really have learned a lot.
That, or you truly are the foul, corrupting beast that my elders would make you out to be.
Somehow, Dominic managed to make that sound like an endearment. He looked toward Sarah.
We need your help.
I know. I picked up on that, too. You seriously want me to go into the nest and tell the dragons that the Covenant is en route? I mean, that's how you think I should be spending my night? I have class in the morning, you know.
I smiled a little. You mean you have a chat date with Artie in a few hours. Can't you reschedule? Sarah didn't blush. She's not physiologically capable of blushing, since she doesn't have hemoglobin in her blood. But she did wrinkle her nose and scowl at me before relenting and saying, I'll email him.
Can we not tell him there's supposed to be a purge coming? I don't want to freak him out.
You know he's going to find out from Dad, and then he's going to be pissed that you didn't tell him yourself.
I know. But I'd rather he be pissed at me later, when this is over, than panicking at me now, when I have other things to worry about.
Sarah sighed. I guess I'm going to miss class too, huh? Depends. Do you think the dragons will finish freaking out in time for you to get a decent night's sleep? It's only 11:30.
Sarah gave me a withering look. She didn't say anything aloud, but in my head I heard, Dominic is really worried about you. Me too, a little bit. But mostly you. I think you should be cautious.
Why? I asked. Do you think he's going to hand me to the Covenant?
No, but I think there's a pretty good chance that he'll drug your drink and you'll wake up on a Greyhound bus bound for somewhere in the Midwest. He doesn't want you to get hurt.
On a scale of 1 to 10, if he's not playing straight, he's got shields I can't break past without a lot of effort. For right now, I'm assuming he's telling the truth.
The subject of our furtive mental discussion was looking at us with weary annoyance.
I can tell when you're discussing me telepathically, you know, he said. Despite my never having sought to develop this particular skill, I've learned to recognize the signs.
We're educational, I said blithely. Sarah's afraid you're going to drug me and dump me on a bus to get me out of town.
I'll admit the thought did cross my...
Dominic stopped and scowled.
I do not appreciate the violation of my privacy.
You invited me in, Sarah countered. I can't help what I see while I'm in there. I wasn't snooping, but the image of getting Verity the hell out of Dodge was pretty prominent in your thoughts.
And I'm not in the mood to play the fainting flower and get shipped off, I said. We all clear on that point?
Dominic sighed.
Sadly, yes.
Good. Sarah, can you please get to the dragons tonight? Let them know the Covenant is coming, and we don't know anything more than that, but that they have my word that we'll do everything we possibly can to keep William safe.
Female dragons are the ultimate pragmatists. William's wives would be perfectly happy to die if that was what it took for him to survive the purge. I guess that's one of the perks that comes with being the last known male of your species. Let me just email Artie, and I'll head right down. That works. As soon as you're done at the nest, I want you to head for the airport and catch the next plane home.